Hey, it's your girl, Carla Renata, the curvy film critic. I got to sing with some Oscar winners, got a little Dark Waters, got some Bryan Stevenson, got some AFI Film Fest. Oh my Lord, I am exhausted already. Stay right there.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Tune in right now.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata. I am your host, Carla Renata, right here at Black Hollywood Live. This is episode 87. I have so much in store for you today. I'm going to give you a little recap of it all. But this is how it works here at The Curvy Critic. If you like me and you're over in that YouTube chat room, give me a thumbs up. Let me know you're there. Give me some comments over on iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and any place that is streaming Black Hollywood Live featuring The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata, and I will answer you right back. I promise you that. I really, really do. But I just want to give a shout out and thank you to folks that always join me right here all the time. Michael B. and Brandon, what is up, y'all? I appreciate you. I love you. And I'm so happy that you are here. I had a very busy week this week, as you can tell based on the schedule for today. But it's all good in the hood. And I'm excited to start talking about it with you. So this is how it works. I do some reviews, I sprinkle it in with some interviews and some news, and I try to keep you guys abreast of everything that is happening in the film world from my point of view. All right, so there's a film that I saw called Dark Waters. Now, everybody has a Teflon pan, right? Everybody likes to cook with a Teflon pan, myself included. Like, that's my favorite jam when I'm cooking, is to cook out of a cast iron Teflon pan, right? Well, Dark Waters made me rethink all of that, because this film, which is directed by Todd Haynes and produced by Focus Features, starring Mark Ruffalo and Anne Hathaway, Mark plays this corporate lawyer attorney who takes on an environmental lawsuit against DuPont. So DuPont is the company that's known for making these Teflon pans, right? And apparently there's an agent that is in that Teflon that, you know how sometimes when you cook with a Teflon pan, some people, and they're not supposed to, my mom does this all the time, uses a metal fork or some kind of metal spoon or whatever to get food out of the pot. Well, when you do that, there's some articles that are in that Teflon that when you ingest it, the human body cannot break it down. And it is known to cause all types of cancer. And the really bad news is everybody, every human being on the planet has ingested this particular agent. At this one particular place in the confines of the film, this one town, it was affecting the livestock, it was affecting the human beings that live there, and they just wanted to get justice for what was being done. It is a riveting story, and I literally came home and got rid of all my Teflon pots. No lie. Because I was like, it's too late now. I've already ingested it, but I'm not trying to ingest anymore. I was wondering, you know, I was actually wondering why we have so much cancer and stuff in this day and age. And now I know why, because of Teflon pans. But Anne Hathaway in this movie, y'all, she is not the princess. This is not the Princess Diaries. This is not what this is. She is not fluffy and cute. She's not giving you the drama that she gave you in her Oscar-winning performance in Les Mis. This is a completely different Anne Hathaway, and I'm kind of down for anything Anne Hathaway. I love her, but this is a different side of her, and her and Mark Ruffalo are giving some really stellar performances in this film. It's a long film, and it drags a little bit. But it's a film that I feel like everybody should see, because it is educating you about something that you have in your house. So it is called Dark Waters. It is produced by Focus Features, and it stars Mark Ruffalo and Anne Hathaway. I am fascinated with the Indian culture. I love the Indian culture. I love Indian food. It is my favorite thing ever. As a matter of fact, there's a place in Santa Monica called Rita's Gate of India, or Gate to India, that has the best Indian food I've ever had in Los Angeles. Just putting that out there.
100% agree with that.
Oh, right? Josh, have you had it?
Oh, yes.
Very delicious. Oh, my God. It is the best Indian food in Los Angeles. I promise you. Like, the meat is tender, but I'm not going to go off on my tangent, but I had to give my girl Rita a shout out, because she was absolutely lovely when I went there, and I found that place by accident, but I will be going back and taking people with me. But what I am going to say is, I say all of that to say that I interviewed this mother-daughter filmmaking team, Swatsi BC and Devika BC, and they made this film called The Warrior Queen of Jansai. And basically, this is the first time we're seeing an Indian leading lady. She was a Queen Rainey. She was a freedom fighter at 29. Devika does these stunts, which I talk about in the interview. The costumes are beautiful. It's a little long on the long side, but it does pay homage to someone in history that belongs in the Indian history, the British history, that I would know little to nothing about had it not been for this film. But I want you to take a listen to this interview that I did with the ladies about the Warrior Queen of Jansai.
Oh, I'm so excited to speak to you guys. I have so many questions, so let me hurry up. Swati, I was so excited to find out that you were a classical dancer. I started out as a dancer as well. Why did you want to go from being a dancer to being a filmmaker?
All the stories that I had been telling as a dancer were on women's empowerment, and I realized that my outreach was then great. But I said I anyway write my own scripts for dance, and I do the music and the choreography, so I should get her story out to a larger audience, and for that I need film. And I said, so I'll make a film. I need her to come out of Jhansi in India and take her story to the entire world so they can share in it, and for that I do need the medium of film. So as a classical Indian dancer, most of them sing, they write poetry, and they write their own scripts, and they do make short films, even to back up as they're performing on the temples, and do that as lecture demonstrations, which I've been doing for years at the Metropolitan Museum in New York, at Lincoln Center, Symphony Space, and the Brooklyn Museum.
You guys are a mother and daughter team, and mothers and daughters, as I very well know, have a very special relationship. My mama lives with me.
Oh, lovely, and my mother lives with me.
Okay, so y'all know. So how challenging was it for you guys to work together?
It actually ended up working well, and because we had worked on these scripts together, she brought the historical facts to it, and I kind of brought the modern take on what contemporary stories and how they are told. So we were able to spend a lot of time thrashing out exactly how this movie was going to be. So by the time we were on set, we kind of stayed out of each other's hair. It was great working with someone a younger, so you're knowing about the contemporary aspects of it, somebody who has actually a totally different point of view from what I have. And that is a strength I saw rather than a weakness, because for years, when I was doing this 200 scores a year, all of my writings, I used to use them at the 200 schools and see the reactions and get free feedback from all my students. So that's always a great way to tweak your stories. That's why it worked for both of us. There's a trust factor, mother-daughter, that I'm looking out for her, she's looking out for me. We're able to not be sensitive, you know, to taking anything in the wrong way. And it's a team effort where I said, I am using the best of my strengths around me, and I would definitely want to make full use of Devika, not just as an actor, but put in the input of good writing or humor into parts of it, where I'm going OCD and telling her, no, let's just stay with the facts. Let's just do history. And we all had a lot of time to really talk about these themes as well. So I was, how about we did X, Y, Z? And she would say, absolutely not, no. And then I would try again tomorrow and the day after. Until we finally settled on a version of it that we both liked. And we did argue. I mean, it was fun. We argued. Like, she'd say, I know how to ride really well. And I said, I didn't hire a stunt actress. I said, just do your job. And then she's like, no, but everyone tells me I ride well. I said, my insurance doesn't cover it. And of course, by the time I was on the set, and she kicked her horse and ran and galloped and said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I was like, I saw what you did. I said, just, you know, don't try it again. So we did this. I didn't do anything. Yes, you did. You did it three times.
That right there is the mother-daughter thing right there. That is pure comedy.
Oh my God, I really didn't mean it. The horse galloped. I said, I saw it on my monitor. You dug your ties into him.
Y'all are killing me. Speaking of you riding, girl, there were a couple of times that your hands were not holding a rein or holding that horse. Your hands were holding some swords. That looked really difficult.
I tell you, she still has all her teeth. I was very worried that her teeth would be yanked out.
Aww.
So that was just, there's this, I image of the Rani holding her reins in her mouth with a sword in each hand. So that's something we always knew we wanted to put somewhere. I trained a lot here in upstate New York. You know, this is like English riding, like old school English riding that I was learning. And we were practicing, you know, holding a whip in each hand or something else so that I could really be able to ride with only my legs. But that took time, and it was definitely something we practiced. It was a challenge because we were training her in India, having her train in sword fighting, and very ancient form of sword fighting from known as Kalari Payattu, which is from Kerala. Honestly, I can say only because she happened to be part of the project and my daughter that I could get her out at 5 o'clock in the morning with the horses, because the horses cannot ride later. It's hot for them.
This is the first time a feature film has been released on Harriet Tubman, right?
Wow.
Everybody is very excited about it just for that reason. How excited are you guys to be having made this film, which is featuring, I believe, for the first time, an Indian leading lady? What took so long?
You tell me. I think that's exactly it. I mean, when you're raising money for a movie, it's a lot safer to have a white male superstar as your lead.
Oh, my God.
I think it's hard for people to take risks and do things that haven't been done prior, and unless you have a vested interest in it, it's a lot of hard work because it needed so many thoughts and pieces to bring this project not to be just Indian or for India, because there's so many beautiful movies for India. This intent was to share it with the global audience, and if that doesn't happen, frankly, I wouldn't have bothered to make it.
Well, as a fellow woman of color, I wholeheartedly appreciate the fact that you did this film. And thank you both for taking the time out of your day to speak with me. I know it was a bit of a challenge because of your schedule, but I do appreciate you taking the time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. It was great. Very appreciative. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks again, Devika and Swati. I love them. They were hilarious. You heard that little banter, that mother-daughter banter that they had. It reminded me of my mother and I. So much that I got a little tickled during the interview. All right, well, we've seen 2 years in a row where there have been films that are featuring Mr. Rogers. For some reason, people are fascinated with Mr. Rogers right now. And another film that's coming out is called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. I talked about this a little while ago when I was at the Toronto International Film Festival. I went to a press conference where Tom Hanks and Susan Kelechi Watson and Matthew Rhys and Chris Cooper and Mariel Heller were all there to talk about the film. But I want to remind you guys what the film is about and what's going on in the film. So the film is produced by Columbia Pictures. It is directed and produced by Mariel Heller. And it is based on an Esquire article written by journalist Tom Junaud and his relationship with Mr. Rogers that ensued thereafter. Now, they've taken a fictional character and put it in place of Tom Junaud. So some of the information in the film is true and some of it isn't for dramatic purposes. But it's a good film. There's some very layered and rich performances by Susan Kelechi Watson. You guys remember her from This Is Us. She's on This Is Us every week with my boy Sterling K. Brown. She plays his wife. This is a very different thing for her. It's a very layered performance. It's a very touching performance, a very nuanced performance, something that we don't really get to see her do a lot of up until this season on This Is Us. Matthew Rhys, Emmy winner, you know, I can't even say enough about him. And the same goes for Chris Cooper. Tom Hanks is a genius, and he's not any less stellar playing Mr. Rogers. He is so completely intricate what he does playing Mr. Rogers that you guys will really enjoy it. The production design is stellar. The costume design, what they did to recreate Mr. Rogers' sweater and the outfit that he wore when he was on the show every day is absolutely impeccable. So get out and check that out when you get an opportunity. It is called A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Now, I've spoken on this show many times about my relationship with Octavia Spencer. She's a two-time Oscar winner. She won an Oscar last well, this, I keep thinking Oscars were last year, but this year she won an Oscar for Green Book. And then a little while ago, she won a Best Supporting Oscar for her role as Minnie in The Help. Now she is executive producing, I think this is the first TV show she's been executive producer for, and it is for Apple TV Plus, which just launched not too long ago with The Morning Show, and we had Mark Duplass on the show from there talking about that show. But now there's another show that's going to drop on December 6th that Octavia is producing called Truth Be Told. And I just want you to take a little listen to this fun interview, and then I'll tell you more about the show after that.
Up, y'all. What's I up? Love Truth Be Told. Oh, it's my favorite show thus far.
Oh, great.
Yeah, thank and you. I just wanted to take some time out to congratulate you on the Breaking Bad movie.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And congratulate you on being honored by the Producers Guild with the Visionary Award.
Thank you.
How does
you.
It feel, little girl from Alabama?
This little girl from Alabama, Truth Be Told, is very excited about life right now.
I'm so happy for you and so proud of you.
Thank you.
Do you think that the relationship between the two of you in this show is fueled by the fact that you have two parents that have something going on? Your mother has cancer, and your father has some early onset dementia happening. Do you think that is something, a commonality, a thread between the two of you that make you fascinated with each other?
Maybe. You know,
I think that's a causal thing, but not a...
Yeah. I mean, because, you know, at the beginning, he's not aware.
Right.
But he's definitely... maybe drawn in by this new information, but he looks at Warren looks at Poppy as being one of the reasons he's sitting behind this prison, and so yeah, I think he's kind of upset with her, but also wait, maybe she could be
the key to getting out,
yeah.
Yeah, well, I think Poppy also uses the information of your mom being sick to gain access, but she doesn't know that her father, what's going on there. That we were just discussing the beauty of the complexity of all of these different families and how this one crime has affected all of those families.
Yeah, it's got this common thread going on, and we both... deal with things like your past has put you in the situation where you are in prison. Your past is catching up with you in different glimpses throughout the series, right? Mm-hmm. What is one thing from both of your past that you'd like to forget, or someone that you'd like to forget?
Oh, God, where do I start? No, I'm kidding.
I don't have anybody that I want to forget.
Yeah,
because
same.
Something that I...
You know what I've come to realize when you get close to 40? When you come close to turning 40, or somewhere thereabouts, and you know,
the generality
of 40,
yeah.
you accept everything as it is, and you take it as a lesson or a blessing.
Yeah,
and I'm keen to both.
Yeah,
if it's a blessing, thank you Jesus, and if it's a lesson, thank you Jesus.
Right,
we don't do that again.
You gotta just roll with it. You cannot be held back from your past. You just gotta learn from whatever mistakes or tragedy or anything, and just kind of pick yourself up and march forward, because that is really the only thing you can do.
Only thing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That's my time.
Oh,
I appreciate
thank
you.
You.
Thank you.
She said, "You look beautiful." That's what she said. And I purposely kept it there because I just wanted to finish that sentence for her. But thank you, Aaron Paul and Octavia Spencer. Like I said, Truth Be Told will be on Apple TV Plus on December 6th. I have other interviews that I did with Lizzie Kaplan, Elizabeth Perkins, the showrunner, Nichelle Tramble, and Ron Cephas Jones, who plays Octavia's father on Truth Be Told. And Truth Be Told basically is a dramatic murder mystery that centers around Poppy and Warren, Octavia and Aaron's characters. Octavia plays this podcaster, very much like moi, who was a crime reporter. And because of what she reported, it resulted in Warren being put behind bars for murder. Now she's not so sure that she's convinced that he did it, and she's thinking that he may be innocent. And that's how the series starts, and it just goes from there. So it's very intriguing. I loved it. So check it out on December 6th, Apple TV Plus, Octavia Spencer, Aaron Paul, and all the others that I mentioned. We have some more interviews coming later on with all of them, and you can check those out later on in the next few weeks. I'll just keep rolling them out as we go along. Now, 21 Bridges. Now, y'all know Chadwick Boseman, T'Challa, from Black Panther. He is very well known most of the time for doing, you know, playing historical figures or being the Black Panther. Let's just say that. But this time, he is playing a cop, and I was there for all of it. 21 Bridges is directed by Brian Kirk. It's produced by STX Entertainment. It also stars Taylor Kitsch, Sienna Miller, and Stephon James. And you guys remember Stephon James from If Beale Street Could Talk last awards season. And Sienna is in a film called American Woman, which she's getting a lot of praise and positive critical acclaim reviews for that performance in that film. But Chadwick plays this cop who is, I guess cops run in his family. His dad was a cop, he was a cop, but they were clean cops. So what happens is he uncovers a ring of dirty cops while they are on the lookout for these two guys who are cop killers, Stephon James being one of them. It was great to see Chadwick playing not a superhero and not someone of a historical reference. To see him playing a strong, grounded police officer. And it was great to just see him doing something different. He's so talented. I really appreciate him and like his work. Stephon James, on the other hand, is doing some very different work. He's usually playing a little stronger, and he always plays characters that are a little vulnerable. But this character is vulnerable in a different kind of way. And we talked about him here about If Beale Street Can Talk, and we talked about him here when he was on Homecoming with Julia Roberts for Amazon Prime. But this is a different kind of character for him. And Taylor and Sienna are just deliciously devilish. That's all I'll say, because otherwise Sienna will kill me. But I do have some interviews that I did on behalf of Shadow and Act. You can find them there on their website at Shadow and Act. I did some interviews there for them. And you'll be able to find the interviews that I did with Chadwick, Stephon, Sienna, and Taylor over at that site, Shadow and Act. But this film is strong on action and short on plot. And that's all I really have to say about 21 Bridges. It was a lot of gunfighting going on. It was interesting, but it was a lot of it. So at any rate, it hits theaters this week. All right, so this is my favorite interview that I did this week. I was busy, y'all. Your girl was busy and running around like a crazy person all week long, but I was sent out on interviews and junkets and things for lots of people. So I was glad to get the work and grateful that my sisters were looking out for me. So shout out to Brooke Obi and Fania Thomas for hooking a sister up. So Fania assigned me to go cover the Frozen 2 junket. And we did a plethora of interviews that you can find at EUR Web on their site. But I wanted to share this one just because it's special to me. I was in Avenue Q, as I've said here many times, and I played Gary Coleman on Broadway and in the first national tour. Avenue Q was written by Bobby Lopez, and Bobby Lopez and Kristen Anderson Lopez won the Oscar for writing Frozen. So this is the sequel to Frozen 2, and I got to do this interview with them where we got to sing some Into the Unknown, and I was really excited. So I'll let you take a listen before I start talking about the film. I'm so excited.
First of all, let's just acknowledge the elephant in the room. What is up, Bobby and Kristen?
Hey,
it's not
how
like
you
we
doing?
Don't know each other.
I'm trying to get the lyrics up for you.
Back
here.
From the Avenue Q days.
Back from the Avenue Q days. I'm so excited to be able to talk to y'all in this capacity. Well, what? Go ahead. Bring it up.
Never mind.
What is it like to revisit this franchise that has made superstars out of both of you?
We never really left. we wrote Frozen 1. We worked with the same team on the Broadway show, and now we're still working with them on Frozen 2. It's been a very long play date. My wife.
I like that. An
8-year play date with Anna and Elsa.
This theme of the movie this time around is about going on this journey to your past to figure out where your present and your future is going to go, right? Mm-hmm. With the sisters. What is the one thing from you all's past that you wish you could forget?
I was mean to a girl once, and it still haunts me. It haunts me that I didn't stand up. It was a Halloween, And she wanted to come trick-or-treating with us, but we were going as Flopsy, Mopsy, Cottontail, and Peter. And there was no more bunny for her to be. And so we told her she couldn't come. And so she went with her dad as Bluebell Bunny. And it still haunts me to this day. Don't be mean. Just include the extra bunny.
And have the girls realized that their mommy and daddy wrote Frozen? Do they realize that?
They do, but they're so much a part of what we do. They were in the first movie. They did Scratch for the second. They're the first people who hear the songs. That I think this is a family business. It just is. They're a part of it.
Because you do have two daughters, what was you all's favorite lullaby that you'd like to share with them?
We write lullabies for them all the time, and the lullabies we wrote, we sang Remember Me for them a lot, and we sang this, the lullaby from Frozen 2 for them.
That's right. You want to sing it?
Where the north wind meets the sea, there's a river full of memory. Sleep, my darling, safe and sound, for in this river all is found.
I love that song because I'm like, that is right in my range. I was so excited. So excited. What's your favorite holiday classic, you guys?
Oh, we wrote a new one this year. I don't know if it's a classic yet, but Adina sang
Into the Unknown. I have been singing that song since I've seen it in the movie.
No, we mean a Christmas song. We wrote a new song for Christmas for Adina's album called It's All Celebrating Mrs. Claus. Because we know who really gets Christmas done.
Right?
Mrs.
Girl,
Claus.
Sorry, Bobby.
Yeah. Happy to give that one up.
Oh, my God. Could you break off a little bit of Into the Unknown for me real quick?
Sure. Had my adventure?
Yeah.
I've had my adventure. I don't need something new. I'm afraid of what I'm risking if I follow you into the unknown. Into the unknown. You take it. Into the unknown.
Yeah.
Thank you. Well.
Was singing that Into the Unknown song and was losing my little black mind, but I was so excited to do that with them. I love them so much. They're so wonderful and so gracious. EUR Web also had me interview. I did Jonathan Groff. I did Josh Gad, Sterling K. Brown, Evan Rachel Wood, and the filmmakers and producers, Jennifer Lee, Chris Buck, Peter DeVecco, and I know I'm missing, and Adina Menzel and Kristen Bell, I interviewed them. So if you go to EUR Web, EUR Web, you can see all of those interviews and videos that I did with all of those people, and I'll throw them up on my site as well. But Frozen 2 brings the humanity and heart from the original to the sequel. It's dealing with the sisters as they search the past to define their future. I didn't feel it was as strong as the original, but you know what? It's Frozen. Anna and Elsa are back. Who really cares? That's all I have to say about it. But I just wanted to shout out Adina Menzel. She's in Uncut Gems, A24's film with Adam Sandler. And Kristen Bell has a Christmas album, as Bobby and Kristen mentioned. It is on Apple Music right now, featuring a cut that they wrote with her. And Kristen Bell also has a show called Encore on Disney Plus, which deals with people that wanted to be on Broadway when they were kids but never really fulfilled that out. So they go back to high school to perform a musical that they did in high school. So check that out when you get an opportunity. All right. Very briefly, because I'm running out of time, I want you to hear this interview that I did with Brian Stevenson. He wrote a book called Just Mercy. It's been made into a feature film starring Jamie Foxx and Michael B. Jordan. Michael B. Jordan plays Brian in the film, and it is the centerpiece of the AFI Film Festival, which I will talk about right after this.
Saw you doing a TED Talk a long time ago. And I know, right? So random. And when you told the story about your grandmother saying to you that you were special and you could do anything you wanted to do, that resonated with her because she remembered when I was younger, a counselor said that to her about me.
Oh.
So for that,
In addition to your work with incarcerated people, she felt like I should pay attention to you and your work. So I did, and I do.
Oh, thank you. That's great. And your mom sounds great. She's wonderful.
I saw Just Mercy at the Toronto International Film Festival. I felt like it was a very inspirational film because it encourages people to look beyond the crime and see the men or the women accused. And yes, some of them have committed some heinous crimes. And maybe these individuals are people that have served our country or suffer from PTSD, but maybe they have some mental issues or require some medical attention, but not right. death row. Right. I felt like every human being on this earth is a daughter, a son, a mother, a father who deserves to be treated with empathy or simply just mercy. I saw a quote that you wrote, or not wrote, or something that you said specifically about this. So you said, after presenting the data and making my arguments about the unconstitutional exclusion of African Americans, the judge complained loudly, quote, "I'm going to grant your motion, Mr. Stevenson, but I'll be honest, I'm pretty fed up with people always talking about minority rights, African Americans, etc. When is someone going to come to my courtroom and protect the rights of Confederate Americans?" End quote. And so I feel like this seems to be an ongoing thematic trend in America at the moment. Uh-huh. Why do you think this ideology is so popular, and what can people of color who are not in the legal system, just plain old people like myself, what can we do to turn it around?
Well, first of all, thank you for seeing the film. And I really wanted to make sure in the movie, as well as in the book, that I told the stories of people who were not just factually innocent, because everybody deserves justice. And we have a lot of people who have been properly convicted but unfairly sentenced. And I do believe that each of us is more than the worst thing we've ever done. I think that if somebody tells a lie, they're not just a liar. And if somebody takes something, they're not just a thief. I think even if you kill somebody, you're not just a killer. And we have to know the other things you are before we judge you. And in our system, that doesn't happen a lot, and that creates unfairness. And I really wanted that to be communicated. And for people of color, it is especially problematic because of this long history of racial inequality. And I think that sentiment expressed by the judge you cite and this problem that we are currently facing is a function of, I think, our long history of silence about what we have done to sustain racial inequality and racial injustice. I don't think we're truly free yet. I think we're burdened by this history of racial injustice. I think it's created a kind of smog in the air. In many parts of this country, we have affirmed that history. We have celebrated it. We've romanticized it. We have not been honest. In that respect, I do think we have to engage in narrative work, and that's partly what we're trying to do with our new museum and our new memorial. It's partly why I wrote this book. But there are things that we have not talked about in this country. I think we haven't talked about the Native genocide, what happened to Native people when Europeans came to this continent. Was it genocide? We killed millions of Native people through famine and war and disease. We kept their lands and their words, but we made the people leave. And we haven't acknowledged that. And we justified that violence by saying that Native people, well, all those Native people, they're savages. We created this rhetoric shaped on race. And before we had a constitution, we had an ideology, a narrative of white supremacy, a narrative of racial difference. And that ideology is what got us comfortable with 2.5 centuries of slavery. And I think the great evil of American slavery wasn't involuntary servitude or forced labor. I think it was the narrative we created to justify enslavement. We said that Black people aren't fully human. Black people can't do this. Black people can't do that. That ideology was the true evil. And if you look at the 13th Amendment, it talks about ending involuntary servitude and ending forced labor, but it doesn't say anything about ending that narrative of racial difference, that ideology of white supremacy. And because of that, I don't think slavery ended in 1865. I think it evolved. And so our modern criminal justice system is still burdened by thinking that creates a presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to Black and brown people. And that's how people like Walter McMillan get wrongly convicted. It's how people like Herbert Richardson get the death penalty when he needs mental health care. It's how people like Anthony Ray Hinton have to spend 30 years on death row before their innocence can be embraced or accepted or recognized. And it is why the work is so important and so urgent. I am really persuaded that we're in a moment now where we're going to have to do this important narrative work. You know, we have cultural museums like the Holocaust Museum in D.C., and it's a narrative project. When you get to the end of that museum, you are motivated to say never again. But we actually haven't created spaces that motivate people to say never again when it comes to our history of racial inequality, which is partly why we're trying to do the work we're trying to do.
What I really want to know, Michael B. Jordan playing you in the movie. That's all I'm going to say.
know, I feel so fortunate and honored. And people say, well, who's playing you? And I say, it's Michael B. Jordan. And they look at me. I said, it's the young me. Stop looking at me like that. Don't be mean. And, you know, Michael's been great. He's been fantastic to work with. We've spent a lot of time together. He's been really wonderful. He was very earnest and very committed. He was asking me all kinds of questions about what to do and blah, blah, blah. And his instincts were great. And the only thing I said, the only thing you don't need to do is when you get ready for the shoot, don't lose the Black Panther Creed body when you play me. I don't want you going on no kind of lawyer diet or anything like that. That can be the one inauthentic part of your performance. I want you to come looking just like that.
That is pure comedy. Oh my God, that is hilarious.
No, everybody has really been great to work with. Michael and Jamie Foxx and Brie Larson and Rob Morgan and Kaven Kendrick and Tim Blake Nelson. They've all been terrific. Really, really committed, which has been wonderful.
Well, the casting was stellar. Shout out to Carmen Cuba for that.
Yes, indeed.
So let's talk a little bit, last but definitely not least, about the EGI, Equal Justice Initiative. I know you guys not only work with people that are sentenced to death, you also deal, well, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of your clients are children that are in adult prisons, people right. that are being prosecuted underage, people that are dying while they're incarcerated, people that have extreme sentences for something as simple as marijuana possession. So I just want you to speak briefly about EGI and what you guys do and where people can go and donate to your cause.
Thank you. Yeah, we are really trying to end over-incarceration, mass incarceration, and excessive punishment. The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. We've got 2.2 million people in our jails and prisons, 6 million people on probation. There's 70 million people with criminal arrest histories. And there are lots of communities and families and people who have been burdened by what I think of as an excessive and at times predatory criminal justice system. And so we're trying to respond to that. We are particularly focused on helping vulnerable populations. Thousands of children have been prosecuted as adults and put in adult jails and prisons at great risk of abuse and mistreatment and assault. And we're trying to end that. There are 13 states that have no minimum age for trying a child as an adult. And so we're committed to reforming that. I've represented 9 and 10-year-old kids facing 50 and 60-year prison sentences in adult prisons. And I just think that's fundamentally unfair. I actually think that all children are children, and that we don't show our commitment to children by looking at how well we treat talented kids and gifted kids and privileged kids. Our commitment to children has to be expressed by how we treat poor kids, neglected kids, abused kids. And our criminal justice system has failed in some critical respects in that way. We are trying to do something about the mandatory sentencing, extreme punishment. You know, our politicians declared a misguided war on drugs in the 1970s and 80s. They said that people with addiction and dependency problems are criminals, and we're going to use the criminal justice system to respond to that. I actually think we could have said people with addiction and dependency problems have a health care need, and we need our health care system to respond. But that choice has now created these conditions, and we're trying to address that with more responsible and appropriate sentences that give people a chance to recover, that foster rehabilitation, that help communities, recover from the challenges that we've seen. And EJI is a private nonprofit. We don't charge any of our clients money. We represent everybody for free. We rely on donations. We have started doing a lot of narrative work. We opened a museum called the Legacy Museum in Montgomery, and we now have the National Memorial for Peace and Justice, which is dedicated to thousands of victims of lynching and racial violence. And I really do believe our nation needs an era of truth and justice, and EJI is trying to lead in that area, because we're going to have to commit to talking more honestly about our history and the bias and discrimination that we still see in so many places, that's evident in so many ways, I think won't be overcome until we talk more honestly about this history. So we do that work, and we issue lots of reports. We're working on curricula for schools to use to kind of engage with these issues in a more honest way. And I hope people will visit Montgomery and come and see our sites. I hope they'll go to our website, which is EJI.org, and learn more about the work we're doing and about the ways in which they can get involved.
Well, wow. I have to applaud you. Like, if my hands were free, I would applaud you with both of my hands. Because it's mind-boggling to me that one person is making such a dramatic, enormous shift and change in this lane. I, for one, appreciate appreciate you for that. I wholeheartedly hope that the work continues. It just gets bigger and it gets stronger. I know you guys are screening at the AFI Film Festival in Los Angeles. So yes. Have a good time with that. I'll be cheering for y'all from the rafters with that one.
And thank you.
Yes, of course. And I thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. I really wholeheartedly appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I know we are running short on time, so I will just say thanks again to Brian Stevenson. Just Mercy hits theaters in 2020, so I have other interviews with them that will roll out as we get closer to the release date. But I did want to just shout this out real quick, some real quick news for y'all, and before I go. Yes, that's my music, my news music. Okay, Disney Plus reached 10 million subscribers when they opened on November 12th. So that, I wanted to shout out that. The Mandalorian series dropped, the Star Wars series, so check that out. These are my streaming picks, my Curvy Critic picks that I want y'all to check out. Claws is on Netflix, check that out. Sesame Street celebrated their 50th anniversary. Yes, Sesame Street. They have a special anniversary show that is on HBO. The Apollo is a documentary about the world famous Apollo in Harlem, New York, which I moderated a panel for with Roger Ross Williams, the director, and one of the producers, Lisa Cortez. We did that. It is on HBO right now. I wanted to give you a little shout out about, well, not give you a shout out, but talk about this thing with Monique and Netflix. Monique has now filed a racial discrimination lawsuit with Netflix, so we'll see how that turns out. We've talked about that situation here lots of times. Stephanie Elaine and Lynette Howell-Taylor are two women that are going to be producing the Oscars. And the Oscars will air on February 9th, 2020. It's hard to say that, isn't it? Robert De Niro is being honored with a Lifetime SAG Award, and that airs on January 20th, 2020 on TBS and TNT. One of the documentaries that we talked about here on The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata, Apollo 11, was the recipient of multiple Critics' Choice Documentary Awards, including Best Documentary Feature, Archival Documentary, Science Nature Doc. The list goes on, but you can check those out at criticschoice.com. Toni Morrison's documentary, which we've also talked about here, The Pieces I Am, won an award. And Linda Ronstadt's The Sound of My Voice won an award. Spike Lee is producing and directing a film called Prince of Cats, based on the Ron Wimberly graphic novel, told through the characters in Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, specifically through the eyes of Tybalt, Juliet's cousin, and that is being produced by Legendary Pictures. George Tillman Jr. is producing a film on the Black Panthers, and you guys will know him from The Hate U Give. It's telling the story of the relationship between Black Panthers' Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale's relationship, and Charlize Theron was honored by the CDG, the Costume Guild of America, for personifying excellence and integrity and style to every character she inhabits, including a special awareness. The AFI Film Festival is now up and running here in Hollywood. Over at the TCL Chinese Theater, we mentioned that Just Mercy played last night. It opened with Queen and Slim, starring Daniel Kaluuya and Jodie Turner-Smith. That film is directed by Melina Masukas, produced and written by Lena Waite. The Crown opened. Two Popes with Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce will be up tomorrow. I'll be there for that. The Aeronauts with Felicity Huffman, Oscar winners Felicity Jones and Eddie Redmayne. That's going to be on Tuesday. I'll be there for that. There's a world premiere of Richard Jewell, directed by Clint Eastwood and starring Olivia Wilde, Kathy Bates, John Hamm, and Sam Rockwell. And closing out the festival is The Banker with Sam Jackson, Nia Long, and Anthony Mackie, with Mackie and Jackson producing it. It is the story of two Black men who were producing banks here in Los Angeles. Not producing banks, but buying up real estate and buying up banks, and the racial injustices and perseverance that they endure in the process of that. Whew, I got through it all. I'm so proud of myself. Yay. All right. Well, that will do it, y'all, for this edition, episode 87 of The Curvy Critic with Carla Renata here at Black Hollywood Live. Of course, you can find us or find me across all social medias at The Curvy Critic. Next week, I will be joined by my guest co-host and maybe a special guest co-host. We're still working on that one. But Variety's Angelique Jackson will be here with me next week, and we're going to talk about Knives Out, Queen and Slim, and Holla. And we're going to give our predictions, since the awards are starting to roll out, we're going to give our predictions of who we think might make it down to the final, you know, race. And I believe that is it. So catch me every week right here at Black Hollywood Live. Give me a thumbs up in the YouTube, on the YouTube page. Subscribe to the channel there. If you're there, subscribe so that you can get alerts about the show. And you can catch me right after this over at AfterBuzz TV doing General Hospital, and on Monday nights moderating and talking about Dancing with the Stars. So until next week with Angelique Jackson, love, peace, and hair grease, y'all. And I'll catch you on the flip side. Bye.
On behalf of our BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to Black Hollywood Live, the world's first digital broadcast network devoted entirely to urban entertainment and pop culture. Check out our Black Hollywood Live YouTube page for even more great programming and amazing content. And be sure to subscribe and like our channel when you do. I'm your BHL host, Nakia Monet, and you can find me on all social media at Kiki Boom Boom or at Black Hollywood Live. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.